Next case we'll hear is Capital Environmental Services versus North River Insurance. And Mr. Horvath, when you're ready, we'll hear from you.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court.
Counsel's not in place behind you yet.
My apologies. May it please the court. My name is Steve Horvath, and I represent Capital Environmental. We're here on an appeal of a summary judgment ruling where the court ruled that there's no obligation for North River to indemnify us under a policy of insurance. I want to briefly review the facts because it's very key in this case for the analysis as to what happened. My client, Capital, contracted with EarthTech to help clean up a refinery down in Florida. EarthTech subcontracted with Freehold Cartage. Under our contract between Capital and EarthTech, we had an obligation to indemnify them and to defend them for any claims that arise out of acts, errors, or omissions of my client, Capital Environmental, or our sub-tier subcontractors, which would be Freehold. What happened in this particular case is that we hired Freehold to take some product out of the refinery. Freehold's employee, Peter Bash, drives an 18-wheeler, backs it up on the highway, cuts off a couple lanes of traffic at night, and there's an accident. The undisputed facts in this case, based on the summary judgment motion, show a pretty set of egregious facts on the part of the Freehold employee. What happened is that the person who was injured in that accident sued EarthTech, and EarthTech then brought a third-party claim against Capital. EarthTech had two central claims against Capital. The first is that we were to have provided them with a policy of insurance, and the second is that we were to indemnify them under our contract that we had. Capital then tendered that claim to North River, its insurance company.
Can I ask you this, it might cut through it a little bit. We have a loss that was settled at a $700,000 figure. And the loss was attributed to the contract claim as opposed to the indemnity claim. And it was a settlement of that. And at this point, there could be no claim for further loss. There is no claim, and there couldn't be no claim under the indemnity agreement, even though there could have been originally. At this point in time, the claim on the breach of contract count was settled, was adjudicated and settled, and that extinguished the loss. And so that Capital has no loss, possible loss, has no loss based on its indemnity agreement. That's the nub of the contract, because the contract says to pay a loss. Now, it could have been a loss, but it turns out the way it was managed and handled, instead of allocating, the whole loss was paid in settlement of the contract claim.
With that premise, I disagree fundamentally.
Okay.
There's absolutely no evidence in the record that supports Judge Ellis's decision in that fact.
No,
absolutely
I'm not asking not. Judge Ellis. I'm asking about the facts in the case.
And the facts of the case are that we settled the entire claim, including the indemnification claim. What happened is down below on summary judgment.
There was no indemnification claim. It had been rendered moot.
With respect to the court.
Is that right?
The court had said it was rendered moot, that Judge Ellis needs to decide that issue.
I'm talking about Florida.
Florida said it was moot. They said, and their intent was in rendering it moot. You have to look at the intent of what the court said.
It doesn't matter. The point is there was no loss attributed to that claim.
I disagree, because the case was settled. The case was settled for less than the full amount, and we settled.
But the only judgment entered was on the contract claim.
That's
right?
Correct, but that happened.
Covered $900,000 with interest and all the other stuff, and settled at $700,000. And the question I suspect is, how are you going to get the jury rendered the judgment, extinguished the plaintiff's loss, rendered a judgment for whatever it is, we have to use some number, $900,000. And that was only on the contract claim. That's the only thing the jury worked on.
The damages for both claims were identical.
What did the jury find?
The jury only was asked to find the issue as to what was the reasonableness of the attorney's fees and the settlement. That's what they were asked to do.
Did the jury find the damages, or was that settled with the plaintiff?
No, the jury found the damages. That was the only issue that the jury heard. The jury did not hear whether or not there was a claim for failure to get insurance or a claim for failure to comply with the indemnification clause.
Who heard the claim? The judge heard the claim on whether there was a breach of contract?
The judge decided on summary judgment that there was a failure to procure insurance. The judge did not rule.
Did he enter any damages in respect to that summary judgment?
The jury awarded the damages after the summary judgment.
And what was the judgment?
The judgment was $585,000 plus interest on that.
Okay. And that was for breach of the contract,
well,
that judgment.
Eventually it was, yes. And then
Well, that's my point. The judgment was for breach of the contract. And the judgment included damages, which were all the damages. In other words, the plaintiff could not get any more damages. That was extinguished by the judgment.
Well, I disagree. You can get multiple judgments.
They didn't get multiple.
I understand that. But here what happened was the court said the measure of damages, whether you go for failure to provide the contract of insurance or indemnity, are exactly the same.
I agree. I think in this case, the right way to have handled this, you had two theories of liability, one under the indemnity and one under breach of contract, and the one's insured and one's not. The appropriate way to handle that would have been to divide it. But the fact of the matter, the way it was managed, is that the only judgment entered in this case extinguished the loss. So the only judgment in this case was entered on the indemnity, on the breach of contract.
But that doesn't extinguish the indemnity claim. That indemnity claim is still extant.
The loss is the plaintiff's claim. The plaintiff's claim is the loss, the injury. The plaintiff was compensated by a judgment on the breach of contract.
The plaintiff was compensated by a settlement that settled all claims. The plaintiff was not...
All claims was a judgment for $900,000.
No, we still had a possibility of the claim for the indemnification. That happens all the time.
I was in that business, and it doesn't happen all the time.
Well, up in this court, we mediate cases after we get a judgment.
Yeah.
And so we try to resolve them after we get a judgment.
If you get a judgment on a breach of contract claim that extinguishes the plaintiff's loss, you could have gotten a judgment also on the indemnity claim, but there was no judgment entered on that.
And you have to keep in mind what happened in this case. North River refused to provide a defense. We filed a claim and said, you have to defend and indemnify. The court said, you breached the duty to defend. The court then said, how are we going to resolve the issue as to whether or not there's an obligation to indemnify? Because that's a factual determination as to whether there's an obligation to indemnify. And the parties said, okay, court, that we know that Florida has already made a decision on the summary judgment motion where they granted summary judgment in favor of the EarthTech on the failure to provide insurance coverage. We knew that at the time.
That's the breach of contract.
That's the breach of contract.
There was a judgment amount entered on that judgment,
but,
right?
But what happened is this, with this key.
Let me answer that question. Was a judgment entered on that judgment?
Eventually there was one.
Okay.
But
and
we
that,
had.
That judgment had no further damage from the plaintiff. That extinguished all the plaintiff's claim.
It does not extinguish it because you could get judgments on two different theories.
But you didn't.
But that's, let me explain what happened, because this is crucial as to what happened in this case. We knew all that going into it. North River is not bound by that decision down there. There's no collateral estoppel.
They're bound by a contractual provision that says they'll pay a loss to capital, which they're obligated to pay, and you have to show that the loss arose out of the indemnity and not the breach of contract.
And that's right. And we were prepared to do that. But what we decided to do, and it's by the stipulation, you have to read the stipulation. What we were prepared to do is to say, court down in Florida, since you have all the facts, you can determine whether there's an obligation to indemnify too. And if you don't determine it, because at that point in time, there was a legal obligation that still existed. There's no dispute about that. They didn't say, because there's a judgment already in Florida, you can't go forward. We stipulated, they said, the issue of contract, this is a stipulation, page 417 of the record, the issue of contractual indemnification was severed by the court, and no decision has been made on the contractual indemnification by the court in Florida. The parties then stipulated, says, the parties in this case, that's North River and Capital, intend to request a circuit court in Wakulla County to consider and decide the contractual indemnification claim. So we knew it was open, we knew there was already a claim down there, we knew there was already an amount down there, and we said, let that judge down there make the decision on the indemnification claim because they have all the facts, they have all the witnesses down there. And so we decided to let them try to make that decision. The court that goes on to say, the parties further agree that since the issue of contractual indemnification is already before the Florida court, the Florida would be a better position to decide this issue. That was stipulated to. And the final thing that was stipulated to, and this is what's so upsetting about the case, because we said Florida will decide the issue. If they don't decide the issue, we'll decide it, because at that point in time, there was still a legal obligation to pay. The party said, in the event that Florida court does not decide the issue of contractual indemnification, the parties request a right to apply to this court. So we knew the Florida court had already resolved that issue. The issue of indemnification was still open. We said Florida is in a good position to make that decision. And what is Florida? And we say, if Florida doesn't decide it, we'll take it back up here. That's exactly what it was. We had agreed to that. We had agreed to those set of facts with all that knowledge. And then Florida says, we don't want to decide it.
The case before Judge Ellis was a coverage case, right?
Yes.
All right. So Judge Ellis did not have the breach of contract claim on, there's two contracts, indemnity and the breach of contract supply insurance.
No, he did. He did have that claim.
Why do you have that?
He had the indemnification claim because we made a suit for that, and we were prepared to go forward in the first one on the indemnification claim. That at the very end of the hearing, the judge says, how are we going to resolve the indemnification claim at this time? That was in Capital One. That was a first decision that was part of that case at that time. So we had that before.
This. A station, gas station, installs a tire and breaches the contract and is negligent. And a lawyer brings the negligence and could recover on either. You have to accept that. Could recover on either theory. The court tries the negligence case to the jury. Jury finds the person negligent, enters a judgment of $500,000, and then the court dismisses the contract claim as moot. That $500,000 now extinguished all the damages. There it cannot be a judgment at that point on the contract claim. There could be a judgment, there'd be no damage because the damage has already been assessed under the contract claim. Now they could have maybe assessed jointly and severally liable under either theory, but that never happened in this case.
And what we tried, the whole idea was that we had a factual issue as to whether or not the indemnification clause applied. It was simply a factual issue. We said that we on Capital One, that was part of the claim for indemnification. The judge says, how are we going to resolve that? And we said, we can let Florida decide because they already have it, or we can let the court up here decide it. But I would submit, Your Honor, you can have as many judgments as you want, as many theories, you only get one satisfaction. That's what the rule is. That was not even addressed below, but that is the rule. I've actually had that situation apply where we got multiple judgments under different theories. You only get one satisfaction of the judgment. That's the key, is the satisfaction. Judgment doesn't extinguish a claim. Satisfaction of the judgment extinguishes the claim. We settled the case. We settled all claims. But the whole purpose of this stipulation was to either have Florida decide it or us decide it. Florida says, we're not going to decide it. It needs to be decided up here. At that point in time, there was a legal obligation to pay. That's why we set it up that way. That's exactly the reason why we set it up. And Florida says, we're not deciding that issue. This is a classic situation where we got whipsawed on this thing. It's just having another person make it.
Object to the Florida court's dismissal of the indemnity claim?
of the, yes, we had appealed that.
And what did the court say there?
The court said exactly that what happened here. They said that decision is for Judge Ellis in Richmond. And it says, why would the court need to get involved in this? Hasn't the federal court in Virginia expressed a willingness to deal with this issue since Virginia law would be applied? And then they also said that I'll be happy for Judge Ellis to make whatever determination. They punted that issue. We agreed to mutually apply for it. When we agreed to mutually apply for it, the judge decided not to. We agreed under that stipulation that if it wasn't decided, and it was not decided, that we would bring it back up here to have the issue, the factual issue as to whether indemnification applies. It was a factual question that we're trying to get resolved. That was it. I noticed that my time is up. I tried to reserve some for rebuttal.
Yeah, but I understand it's procedurally complex, but I must say how the case got into the form that it got into, it's not useful to try to assess blame on that, but it turns out that when you're looking to North River Insurance, you're saying to North River, we have a loss by reason of a breach of the indemnity agreement. And North River looks and says, well, where's your loss by reason of the breach of the indemnity agreement? And as far as North River's concerned, it's not been presented with any loss yet. And so they say, nay. Now, whatever happened to get to that point from North River's point of view, what difference does it make? If you don't demonstrate a loss by reason of the covered contract, which is the indemnity provision, how can they be called upon to pay anything?
Because we had agreed that that involved a factual issue as to whether or not the accident below was the result of the negligence of the subcontractor. And we agreed to have the court try to decide that issue in Florida, and we agreed.
So no court has decided that issue, right?
No court has ever decided that issue.
Okay, so where does that put North River? North River is now facing a claim by you saying we have suffered a loss by reason of a breach of our indemnity agreement. Pay us. And North River says, hold it. Show us where you've sustained a loss by reason of that contract. And at this point, you just concede you can't demonstrate that.
No, we had agreed that the loss was the same dollar amount under either claim. And if it's covered under one of the two theories, under either theory, we get indemnification. We had agreed to let the Florida court make that decision.
I know, but they never made it. For whatever reason, they never made it.
And we had agreed that if the Florida court didn't make the decision, and the only way the Florida court could not make that decision was by dismissing that claim as moot. That's the only possible way they could have done that.
They could have resolved it against you under various theories.
They could be
indemnifying against your own negligence, these types of things.
They could have made it
but
on the merits.
Nobody has yet determined that Capital sustained a loss for breach of the indemnity. At this point in time,
because we've been asking the court for the right to do that.
So why isn't the insurance coverage issue determined by the fact that we have no loss demonstrated?
Because we had stipulated that if the decision for the indemnification was not decided by Florida, that the court up here would decide it. And if we are liable under that theory, then there is an obligation to indemnify. And we had stipulated and agreed that that was the procedure that was going to be used. That's why. They could have stipulated and said, if the Florida court decides it is moot, which there's no way if the court doesn't decide the issue, it wouldn't be moot.
Is your argument that Ellis should have decided that issue, or he decided the insurance issue wrong?
My argument is that the judge decided the insurance issue wrong, and that he should have ruled that there was an obligation to indemnify because the undisputed facts showed that there was negligence on the part of the sub-tier subcontractor, and that there was a breach under that clause of our client failing to pay for the cost of defense of EarthTech. And those are two separate obligations under that indemnity clause, and Judge Ellis unfortunately, missed both of them. He went off on the idea that it was moot, relying on a rule that doesn't mention the word moot, and relying on cases that don't mention the word moot.
And the Florida Supreme Court was, you presented this same argument to the Florida Supreme Court, you want us to overrule them, I guess.
Well, no, the Florida Supreme Court said the federal court in Virginia needs to decide this issue. We're not going to decide. It wasn't the Supreme Court, it was the Court of Appeals.
Court of Appeals.
They never went up to the Supreme Court. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Catalano? Why don't you just give them half?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. I think there are a number of issues and responses. It is a complicated history. The underlying action and the coverage action are interesting procedural history. But the essence of this appeal, and I think we do agree on that, is that we need to determine whether or not North River has a duty to provide indemnity. And in order to have a duty to indemnify Capital, Capital needs to make the threshold showing that they are legally obligated to pay damages covered under the North River policy. And in the absence of covered damages, there can be no duty to indemnify.
Let me ask you just a procedural matter. What lawsuit was before the Eastern District of Virginia?
The lawsuit before the Eastern District was a declaratory judgment where Capital
was... That was Capital against North River?
Yes, it was.
Was there any other suit?
No, Your Honor.
And had that been amended to adjudicate an indemnity claim?
No, it had not, Your Honor. And I think that is one of the things that ends up happening all over the place. There's confusion in the Florida courts, and I think there's some confusion even here.
I mean, even the parties to the contract weren't before the court.
Exactly, Your Honor.
I don't know how they could expect the Eastern District to adjudicate an indemnity claim, liability on an indemnity claim, when the parties to the indemnity agreement are not before the court.
I agree, Your Honor. And I think that sometimes what ends up happening is that there's the use of the word indemnification, and it means two different things.
Well,
sometimes
I'm not talking about the indemnification under the insurance contract. I'm
right.
Talking about the insured contract. Which
contractual
provided
indemnity.
For indemnification between Earth and what's the name of the company?
Earth Tech and Capital.
Earth Tech and Capital. Isn't that where the indemnity agreement was?
That was where the contractual
indemnity
was. So
to adjudicate that liability, Earth Tech and Capital would have to be before the court.
Yes, Your Honor.
And Earth Tech wasn't before the Eastern District of Virginia?
No, it was not. And
well, I'll ask Mr. Horvath that when he comes back up and we can...
And so I think that, you know, kind of zeroing in on that stipulation and some of the questions that were just being addressed at the very tail end of Mr. Horvath's argument, I think what needs to be clear is that what was left open was the duty to indemnify under the North River policy. Judge Ellis had determined that there was a duty to defend the contractual indemnification claim that was pending in Florida.
Exactly, because there was a potential possibility that if the loss was attributed to the breach of the indemnity agreement, then the insurance would have to pay that loss.
There was also the possibility that if Capital was successful in the summary judgment motion that they were pursuing in the underlying action in Florida, where they vehemently opposed that they had any contractual indemnification obligation, that the whole thing would go away and we would never have to come back to Judge Ellis. So Judge Ellis, in that order, and the parties recognized that what was still left open for the coverage case for the Eastern District was whether or not there was ever going to be a duty to indemnify under the North River policy. Contractual indemnification is down in Florida, and it goes forward. And both the trial court and the appellate court, I respectfully submit, did make a determination on contractual indemnification. They found it moot. They found that because...
Well, the argument, I guess, and there are probably a bunch of errors here and mistakes and maybe unwitting ones, but the argument from Florida's point of view is that Judge Ellis indicated a willing to decide this and they deferred to it. But the misconception was that Judge Ellis was going to decide the insurance coverage indemnity. And there was a contractual indemnity between EarthTech and Capital. And that still had to be decided, and Judge Ellis could not decide that issue because he didn't even have the jurisdiction over that issue.
I think that kind of highlights some of the confusion that was going on. And I would respond in two ways to that, too. I think first, there is colloquy in the trial court and the appellate court where there seems to be some confusion about, well, let's go ahead and let Virginia deal with that if maybe we don't have to. But again, I think the indemnity under the North River policy and contractual indemnity was being confused a little bit. But ultimately, neither court, the trial court nor the appellate division, said we won't deal with contractual indemnification, send it back to Virginia. They never say that. They determine, the trial court determines it is moot, and the appellate division.
What I think is Mr. Horvath's Trump argument. And he can speak for himself, but this is what I thought I heard him saying. Regardless of what happened in the Florida court, we had the potential for having the indemnity claim solved there. It was still an open matter. I suppose he could have even filed a separate suit there, maybe after the Court of Appeals turned him down on the mootness issue. I don't know if that would have worked. But his theory of the case is we entered into a settlement agreement, reduced the judgment amount, and in doing that, we created a loss by attributing our obligation to pay to both claims. What's wrong with that?
In response to that, I would say it was not open at that point in time. When the parties entered into a settlement agreement, both the trial court and the appellate division had determined that the contractual indemnification was moot. They appealed that, and the appellate division affirmed it. It was moot. It became a final,
that may have not been open, but he says the liability was still open.
How could it have been if it was a final non-appealable order? There was no, at that point in time, when the parties are entering into the settlement agreement, in fact, 8 months before that, it became mootness, the determination of mootness, and the dismissal of the contractual indemnification claim was a final non-appealable order.
Your argument is that even though they may have tried to attribute loss in the settlement agreement to the contractual indemnity, they couldn't have created a loss because that claim was gone.
Exactly.
And the only open claim was the breach of contract claim, and that was not covered.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Your argument.
Yes, that at that point in time, you know, when there is a final non-appealable order dismissing the contractual indemnification as moot, EarthTech never could bring a claim for contractual indemnity against Capital. So of course, when the parties enter into a settlement agreement, they are settling the only viable claim that's open, and that was the breach of contract, and they settled on, you know, the outstanding judgment and interest that was due. Why would they possibly be settling a claim that EarthTech had no right to bring against Capital? At that point, it was done. And then to try and argue that somehow
what would have happened if they filed after the Court of Appeals entered its order and saying Judge Ellis is going to decide this, and that's, let's assume that's a mistake because they just didn't understand the scope of the lawsuit in Virginia. So at that point, Capital One says they really messed up, and they file a new suit in Florida for breach of the indemnity contract. They file a suit against EarthTech. What would happen to that suit in Florida?
But that's the fiction of all of this, Your Honor, because
their argument would be that you could not have barred that second suit because there was no adjudication on the merits. That's their argument, I think. Their argument would be they rendered it moot, but procedurally. And so they would pursue it. I'm trying to figure out whether there still could be a loss. I think right now it is pretty clear that North River has not been presented with a loss attributable to the indemnity contract. There has been no adjudication, and there's been no demonstrated loss, and Judge Ellis did not have the power to decide that issue. But the question still remains, what if they were able to adjudicate somehow, somewhere?
But how would they, again, that's the whole fiction. Because how would they have done it?
They would.
Capital wouldn't have brought the contractual indemnification claim. EarthTech would have to bring the contractual indemnification claim. EarthTech wasn't going to bring a contractual indemnification claim because they were wholly satisfied under the breach of contract claim, and the trial court and the appellate division had already.
Has EarthTech been paid?
Yes.
Question I have, counsel, is that ordinarily you're probably right, but concern I have is you were a signatory on this agreement. Your name is listed, right? What did you believe that you were reserving in good faith to the party to be able to do? Because at the end it says, in the event that Florida court does not decide the issue of contractual indemnification. Now, that's a two-tiered part, because you agree that the parties agree that such claim must abide, which wait for, a ruling on EarthTech's contractual indemnification claim pending before you can determine ultimately what might be the obligation under the insurance policy. You both agree that that's two. At the end, you refer to it as just the issue of contractual indemnification. Doesn't that necessarily have to include that two-tier question? One, whether there is a contractual indemnification, and then, if there is, whether or not the insurance company has some requirement. And you agree that if that didn't happen in Florida, which it didn't, they didn't decide that issue on either tier, then you would allow them to apply to the court for a ruling. Why is that not the good faith understanding of your agreement with them?
The good faith understanding was that the duty to indemnify under the policy was still open in the coverage case, and that we were waiting to get a resolution of the contractual indemnification claim. And we were waiting because Capital was actually moving for summary judgment to have that claim dismissed. And there was a very good chance that we would never have to come back to the district court.
Well, you said that. I understand that. You were waiting in good faith. Nobody's blaming you about that for economic efficiency. But what you left was that if that didn't happen, you agreed to let them come back to Virginia and to try to get this issue, both tiers of that question, resolved.
We agreed that if contractual indemnity was not resolved such that it potentially gave rise to a duty to indemnify, that the parties were invited to come back and seek that final determination of a duty to indemnify under the North River policy before Judge Ellis.
You agree that Florida didn't resolve that issue, and it didn't. It just said procedurally it's moot.
I respectfully, Your Honor, I believe that mootness determination is an adjudication of the merits, as Judge Ellis found. They did address contractual indemnification, and that
ordinarily it would be moot, but parties can agree on things that you agreed that this would be left open.
No, we didn't. No.
It said that if Florida did not resolve the issue, that the party's request could apply, and I assume that means you wouldn't object to it either. You agreed. Did you object when they tried to come to Florida or come to Virginia? You objected, didn't you?
Yes, Your Honor.
But that seems to be against your word. Your word is that, that's the fair reading. It said the parties will request the right to apply. Implicitly, you wouldn't object to it.
Your Honor, we did not object to resolution of the duty to indemnify. And as Judge Ellis found with respect to his own order, there was never an invitation to come back, take the contractual indemnification claim with the proper parties that was being litigated in Florida and come back and litigate it here.
That's what you said.
I don't believe
that's the plain language of what you said. You said in the event that the Florida court does not decide the issue of contractual indemnification, and since on paragraph 2 you referred to that as both tiers, that is, the parties agree that the claim must abide by the ruling on EarthTech's contractual indemnification claim pending against Capital and potentially, and that's The part, it's two parts of it. And you said either one, if it's not resolved in Florida, they could come back. You agreed to that. That's what you agreed to.
Again, Your Honor, I think that the parties understood, or North River understood.
You're not talking about parties. We're talking about lawyers here, officers of the court. Your word is your bond. You agreed to this. Show me where you didn't agree to this.
Because I think that we agreed to having the Florida court determine contractual indemnification.
But if they didn't, what did you agree to do?
If they did not, such that the duty to indemnify was still open, then that issue would be before the court. That's my understanding of that order. That was my understanding of the agreement. Now, I realize that that is subject to review after the fact, but my understanding was never that I was inviting Capital or counsel for Capital to come back, and that Capital in North River would adjudicate the contractual indemnification claim. But, and because to take that a step further, if that had really been the intent of that stipulation, we're in the fictional world that we are presented with right now, and that is that Capital is asking this court to entertain contractual indemnification. They're asking the court to say, all right, we should determine this, and Capital at this point gets to concede liability on the contractual indemnification claim, because that's what they want to do now that they're back seeking coverage. They want to take a different position than they did in the underlying. They want to concede that this contractual indemnification is so broad in scope and simply step into the shoes of EarthTech. And we're going to, and I guess North River becomes Capital now and tries to argue that it is not that broad an indemnification clause, or that even if it is, it doesn't fall within the insured contract exception. It is illogical to assume that coverage Eastern District case was the forum for resolution of that issue.
Well, why did you want it to come back to Virginia anyway?
It would only come back to Virginia if there was a finding of contractual indemnification, and then the parties would have to come back and see, did that contractual indemnification, whatever ended up happening.
Right. That's one way it comes back, but the other way it comes back is that there was no decision on it. That's what it says. I don't see how you can get around your own words. You live and die by your lawyer. You live and die by your words and your agreements. And you said it comes back if, clearly as you said, that there was a finding, but it also comes back if there's no decision. That's what you said.
And Your Honor, I guess my final response to that would be, there has been a decision. There was a decision.
You think that's a decision on the merits when it said procedural is now moot?
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't know how it could be when you got parties stipulated it's not moot because we have a side deal and we've agreed that we would litigate this in Virginia if you don't do that. I'm not suggesting hoodwinking here, but you can't sign something and put it before a court and then come back and say it's totally different than what our word said. It's not what's in your mind, it's what's on the paper. And show me where you have reserved that kind of understanding that you now represent to the court that you have. Where is that preserved in the letter of this document? You shouldn't have agreed to it. If you wanted Florida to be the final and the word be in, why in the world would you agree that they could come back here to do anything? Because it would be quite simple there. If there was a finding on the contractual indemnification, everybody's down there, decide on what the insurance policy's obligation is too. That makes sense to me. But you wanted it to come back here if Florida didn't decide the whole issue of contractual indemnification. That's exactly what it says.
What was Capital's defense to EarthTech's claim under the contractual indemnity?
That the contractual indemnification should be construed pursuant to California law, and that the indemnification agreement did not include indemnification for one's own negligence, and that
EarthTech had some possible negligence involved.
Yes, Your Honor. And so
So basically they resist the indemnity under the indemnity agreement. And if they were successful, there'd be no loss. They say, we don't have indemnity. The court decides in favor of EarthLink on the breach of contract. and Earthlink has paid entire, its entire loss on that. And now they want to confess, I gather, that they were wrong on the indemnity defense and want to have liability attributed under that for purposes of insurance coverage.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly what's happening there. If they had been successful in their motion for summary judgment, the contractual indemnification would have been dismissed in their favor. There would have been no finding of contractual indemnification. So they would have had nothing to come back to the Eastern District with.
So how would you adjudicate after the Florida case with Earthlink out? Earthlink is the one who would be asserting contractual indemnity. Now Earthlink's no longer presenting that claim. How could there be a loss if Earthlink doesn't present the claim anymore?
Well,
how could you create, have Virginia do that? Who's going to be in Earthlink's position in saying, we want satisfaction under our indemnity agreement?
I think that's the fiction that we're grappling with right now, and it would have to be that Capital steps into the shoes of EarthTech, it is, Your Honor, and that North River then steps.
Well, how can they step in when they have to have a loss vis-a-vis EarthTech?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to argue, and they are arguing that they're going to concede
it's
liability.
It's a conceptual impossibility the way if you guys agreed to try to somehow transfer this adjudication to Judge Ellis, because basically the insured is saying we do not owe indemnity to EarthTech because EarthTech's own negligence contributed to the loss. And so that's set aside, and that's not pressed. And so they pursue the litigation on the breach of contract. EarthTech wins that and gets paid in full. Now, what loss is there after that?
There is no loss unless you want to re-entertain this claim, which in...
Who's going to present it? It's got to be presented by EarthTech.
Well, that's the...
And conceptually, EarthTech can't present it because it's been paid.
That's the whole point of that this is moot. There has been a determination. There is no scenario where EarthTech could ever bring a claim for contractual indemnity against Capital at this point in time. It's done. It's dead. It no longer becomes alive unless
it's dead because
Capital...
mootness, it's dead because... EarthTech has been fully paid.
Has been fully paid. And the only way it comes alive is if Capital brings it back alive,
well,
brings
it back
on themselves.
How can they bring it back? They can't create EarthTech's will to sue for more. And EarthTech is satisfied and said, we have been paid. We sued under two theories. We recovered on one, and we've been paid under one. Now, the second theory has not been adjudicated. They had a risk of losing the second one. But now Capital says we want to lose on the second one. We want to confess a loss under the second one because we get insurance coverage. I think that's about the posture.
It is, Your Honor, and that brings a whole other host of issues in terms of cooperation under a policy, but I'll leave that for another day. I understand that
I see your time is up. Yep. Yeah. Mr. Horvath?
Thank you. If I could address the issues that you raised. The first issue is, Your Honor suggested and counsel suggested that the issue of indemnification was not in Capital One. I would invite your reference to pages 176, 177, and 178, where Judge Ellis decided the motion for summary judgment on the issue of indemnification in Capital One, because that was before the court.
Let's get, whether Ellis is right or wrong now, let's just understand what's going on. We have EarthTech suing you, Capital, under the contractual indemnity. You come in and say you can't recover because you can't indemnify for your own negligence. And that's always
that's
the big
one of
debate.
The
that's
yeah.
one of
the,
there's a bunch right. of defenses. So you, EarthTech has come in under two theories, the contractual indemnity and the breach of contract. They win on the breach of contract, they get paid, and there is a satisfaction. They are paid in full. Now, there is no way in God's country that they can bring a suit again, nor do they have an interest to bring a suit, to adjudicate legitimately, as between them and Capital One, whether the loss was attributable indemnity. You always said it wasn't attributable indemnity because the indemnity doesn't apply. The fact that you agreed to have Judge Ellis decide it doesn't work because EarthTech is not up here.
With respect to those issues, if I could have time to address all of them. The first issue was there was no objection to the indemnification issue going forward by North River in Capital One. And that happens.
Just tell me, how can it happen?
Because it happens like
this.
You're
going to end up confessing. You're going to confess
your fault
in order to get coverage, which is just contrary to insurance law.
But it's like this, Your Honor. If you're in a car accident and you're defending it as a defendant, you say, I'm not negligent. But as soon as a jury finds you're liable, you turn around to the insurance company and you say, pay me because it's now a covered claim. You are entitled to take that position. That's what happens every single day in this world.
I understand, but we do know Earthlink made a claim under two theories. We do know Earthlink succeeded on only one, and we do know Earthlink was paid in full on the one.
No, they weren't. We settled the case, and we settled all claims. We settled all claims. That was it. But you got to keep in mind, at the time of what happened,
and who was adjudicated the contractual indemnity? How could they settle a claim?
If the way it happens is this. We asked Judge Ellis to decide whether or not there was an obligation to indemnify North River, to indemnify Capital because of the insured contract provision.
So you're going to put on a negligence claim, whose negligence contributed
absolutely,
to the accident?
Absolutely.
It's not in the complaint.
It is exactly in the complaint.
Okay, show me. I'm ready to follow.
Because we say in there that there was a failure to comply with the contractual indemnification clause. And we had raised that before.
Just a minute. Show me in the complaint. There's a declaratory judgment. You have to allege a loss by reason of an indemnification agreement.
It says complaint for money damages, declaratory relief.
I've looked through this.
Okay. And if you look at it, we go through the whole issue. We say that that there was a breach of the duty to indemnify. We say that in here.
But that's insurance indemnification.
No, we say that that there was a claim for indemnification under the paragraph 8.2. If you look at paragraph number 6 on page 10, and then we say in paragraph 8 that the suit was a result of Peter Bash, and they were the sub-tier subcontractor. We go through all those allegations in here. That's exactly what we did, because we went through that in Capital One, and because Judge Ellis said, I don't have enough facts under this to make a ruling on the obligation to indemnify.
He didn't have the parties, he didn't have the allegations.
There was no objection to it. He said.
Courts aren't, advisory courts.
Absolutely, but you don't have to have EarthTech there because EarthTech is not a party to the contract.
And you're creating a loss by agreement. In other words, the loss has to be, you have to, in good faith, defend against EarthTech's
and
claim.
And we did that. And we vigorously defended it down below, which we have every obligation.
But prosecuted it, and it wasn't resolved against EarthTech.
But we defended it like we're supposed to down there, even though North River had breached the contract and failed to provide us with a defense.
But unfortunately, EarthTech won only on its breach of contract claim.
That's correct. And we had decided that before there was a ruling on that, we tried to get the court here to indemnify and say there's an obligation to indemnify. And if you look at the record on pages 176, 177, and 178, the court said because the record is insufficiently developed regarding Capital's liability to EarthTech on the indemnification claim, a ruling on cross motions for summary judgment on the duty to indemnify is premature and must be deferred. So the judge took it under advisement, he deferred it. We then entered into an agreement. Let's see if we can get Florida decided. If Florida can't decide it, we're gonna decide it up here. That was the agreement between the parties.
Hold it, you're talking about 176?
176,
well,
177, and 178.
Just a minute. The court's addressing whether North River had a duty to indemnify Capital.
And if you go on,
big
absolutely. And that's because it said the duty to indemnify by North River depends on whether there's a duty to indemnify under the contract. And the court said the current record, factual record, is insufficiently developed to warrant summary judgment for either party.
Well, clearly, because it says North River has a duty to indemnify Capital in the EarthTech action only if Capital demonstrates that it was found liable to EarthTech for bodily injury actually covered by the North River policy. And the fact is that never occurred. And it says it doesn't have the evidence to support that.
Well,
but it's not deciding that.
Not on summary judgment.
It's deciding whether there's a duty to indemnify under the insurance policy.
But
that's what it said.
With all respect to the court, I know I'm not supposed to say that phrase, but
it says the summary judgment on the duty to indemnify is premature and must be deferred.
That's
and
correct.
And explains in this language because you haven't yet been held liable under the contractual
indemnity.
But
even if we were held liable down there, that's not dispositive because North River is not a party and there's no collateral estoppel or res judicata. This happens also every day when you get claims under an insurance contract where someone says all the acts are the
satisfaction down there, and there was a satisfaction.
They settled the case.
That's a satisfaction.
And they settled all claims.
They settled the judgment.
They settled all claims. That's what it says. It doesn't say we settled the judgment, and there's nothing in EarthTech's policy that says we only have to get to collect, I mean, under North River's policy, only get to collect if it is a judgment. We had addressed the issue of indemnification.
Let me ask you this. You are sued. You are sued by a company on two theories. EarthTech sues you on two theories. They recover on one, and the other's not resolved. You pay EarthTech on that one, the full amount of the loss. You settle, or you don't pay them, you settle that claim and purportedly try to settle the other claim for a reduced amount. EarthTech, of course, doesn't care. It got the judgment only on the one, and it wants to be paid. Now, it's in your interest to come back and confess we were all wrong in defending the suit. We really are liable under contractual indemnity, and we're saying that. As a matter of fact, we don't even think we're liable under the breach of contract case. We're liable entirely under the indemnity case, and you say that in Virginia in order to get coverage. No court in the land would entertain that notion, that you could later stipulate away what actually happened.
But we didn't stipulate away.
Well, but you say your agreement did that.
We settled the case. And we were prepared, and if you look at our statement of undisputed facts, which they didn't dispute, the evidence was that Freehold was the negligent party, which would then trigger the obligation to indemnify. Now, yes, we defended the case down there like we're supposed to, but when we look at the facts, we're
entitled. Nobody's adjudicated you liable on that indemnity agreement, and in order to have a loss, you have to be liable.
And we paid the settlement, and that's all we have to do. The only question is a factual question, which Judge Ellis left open, and by stipulation of the parties, we left open as to whether or not the indemnification clause would apply because the act was the result of the negligence of the sub-tier subcontractor. That is a factual issue that was in Capital One that by stipulation we left open. And then when the Florida court didn't decide it, we applied back to the court. There was no question about anything else, about any legal obligation to pay. What we agreed to was this was how we are going to resolve
that
issue.
Let's ask the ultimate question. As of this moment in time, has there been any determination that you're liable under the indemnity claim?
No ruling has been made on the court on that.
Okay. And so, because no ruling has ever been made by a court, you have to argue at most that North River doesn't have any obligation to pay now, but they may have in the future.
No.
There's no, you said there's
we have a settlement where we settled all claims. That settlement is a legal obligation to pay. There is nothing in that policy that says they only pay judgments. They wrote the policy. We didn't write it. They could have said
have
we will pay judgments.
That you're legally obligated to pay.
That's correct. And we settled.
You can't volunteer those legal obligations, especially in view of the fact that EarthTech already won. They didn't care what's in there. They already won their total amount in a judgment. And so now the only thing left for you is to manage that judgment in a way that you can get coverage. But at the point of the time the judgment's entered, EarthTech is fully satisfied in terms of its liability. And it just says, give me the money.
But you got to keep in mind, before that happened,
there's no adjudication.
Before that happened, we told the court here in Virginia there was a, we had a legal obligation to pay under the indemnification agreement. We had that issue there. We agreed on a procedure.
How do you tell the Virginia court there's coverage and at the same time tell them that we have no obligation to EarthTech because EarthTech's own negligence contributed?
How?
Yes.
Because that's no different than you're allowed to take contradictory positions. You cannot get a judgment or decision by that, but that happens again all the time. You plead in the alternative. And we had an obligation to defend the case down there, so we vigorously defended it. But you know what? We could lose that case. That's the obligation of the... But we, that is our obligation to defend the case down there. We have that obligation to defend the case, and we turn around, we come up here, and we show all the facts that say this is why we would have lost that case. And then the court makes a determination as to whether we're right. We set up a discovery plan in this case to do discovery on that issue.
Well, I understand, but the question is whether you can do that, whether you can bypass. In other words, the question is whether Judge Ellis can ever adjudicate the underlying suit without the parties. And the parties, EarthTech was not here, the negligent parties weren't here, the you weren't legitimately defending. There's actually a conflict of interest in this litigation if you were going to try to do the underlying litigation at the same time as coverage.
And I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I didn't do the conflict, but that's exactly right. That's how we set it up in Capital One.
I understand.
There's no objection to us going forward in Capital One. We agreed to carve out that issue of fact for the court to decide, and that was all that was carved out was an issue of fact by a stipulation. And now they're saying, well, forget our stipulation, forget what we agreed to, forget that we said that the court can decide it in Florida. If the court doesn't decide it in Florida, we'll have this court up here decide whether or not the indemnification clause applies. That's how we set it up. That's how we have a stipulation, and we're just trying to get what we agreed to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Horvath. We'll come down. You want to take a little break?